One of the things we like to do at least once a month is give a little bit of an update of some of our missions opportunities. And we have a wonderful missions team. And in case you don't know, we support five people, five families as a church. We support three partner organizations, and we support two projects. And so in amongst that, that's a lot to keep a handle on. We try not to stretch too thin so that we can really build deep, lasting relationships and make a big impact through our support financially, our prayers, and sometimes we go in person. So I'm really glad that Norma heads up our missions team. She's going to give us a report today on our Peru project. Why don't we welcome her?
Thank you. Just in case you didn't know it, I think Country Hills family is just amazing. I have very little family in Canada, and I really, honestly, from my heart, consider this my second family. It feels at home here. And it's wonderful if you can make a church connection and if you can get into a small group and just really love on one another. And one of the privileges we have is to support our missionary families and also projects. And lots of behind-the-scenes things happen within our missions team, and I lead a wonderful group. And so we are very privileged to share with you this morning a little bit about what's happening in Peru. Now, I'm sure some of you have seen some of the tragedy going on in Peru with the flooding that's been going on. And so our hearts go out to our brothers and sisters in Peru. Sometimes I like to write it down. It makes it easier for me and probably flows a little better. So I've done that this morning. We've had a strong history of support for the work in Peru, financially, as well as participating in sending medical teams into the jungle. Last year, we started our relationship with ministry taking place in a different part of Peru, namely the work with drug addicts, street youth, and children in the city of Iquitos. You may recall that we welcomed national missionary Rodolfo Rojas in December, who himself was born and raised in Iquitos. He shared his vision and stories of his involvement in that city, including some of the tremendous hardships of living and working there. In January, Sherry Dills and Pastor Jeremy and I met with Brad Wilson, who's the president of Missionary Ventures Canada, to review our past involvement and also to see how we can continue to support this ministry in the future. And the main objective for Missionary Ventures right now is to raise the remaining support to purchase the property where the children's home is to take place in Iquitos. I will be speaking with Brad this week just to get a better update, but I believe that they have raised approximately 50% of the support to purchase this property. And then in your newsletter this morning, you'll actually see a missions focus on a trip that the Carlsons will be taking place, will be a part of in May. So Pat and Eric Carlson will be traveling to Lima in May and have asked the church family if they would consider donating items of clothing and medications. Although they're not part of a larger team this year, they will be working in women's and men's ministry in the squatters areas of Lima, along with Pastor Alex. If you're interested in participating, the details are in your newsletter and would be greatly appreciated. There's also information at the bottom how to get a hold of Pat by calling her or emailing her if you are able to donate clothing and things like medications, vitamins, creams, formula, and so on. Country Hills has always had a strong heart and pulse for missions, and for that I'm so grateful. We continually seek the Lord to direct us and to grow us so that we're prepared to give financially and sacrificially through prayer. As missionaries come to mind, pray for them, and also pray for our brothers and sisters in Peru with whom we've built strong bonds over the years. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Norma. Well, one of the things we really strive to be as a church is multi-generational. And this morning, Jonathan Swatsky is going to be speaking. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He'll tell you a little bit more about himself because he knows him better than me. But I've known Jonathan for a few years. I think I met him first at Mishawa Camp. I know his parents through Bible College. And Jonathan's one of those kids who you see tons of potential in. And he had a soft heart towards God and an awesome rebellious spirit. And those two things often mix to make a great servant and sometimes a great leader. And so I've just appreciated the way I've seen God get a hold of his life and soften him and mature him over the years. He's the firstborn son I never had. He has lived in our house. My kids are great, but we love him like one of our kids. And he's living in our house. He served with us this past fall. He did his volunteer service from Emmanuel Bible College with us, leading our college and career group. And part of that was to research and look at millennials and young adults and late teens and how we can best interact, engage, and reach that age group. Because it's really very much my heart to do that. Not just that we be a church with young adults and teens in our church, but that we are they're just a regular part of the church. And what impact can we have? And so he's done a lot of work on that. And so we've asked him to come this morning and share his heart as one of them. So he's not sharing from outside. I could share some data, but big deal. I'm not that. So it's really important that you understand before it comes that I'm not just asking him because he's a friend or because I believe in him or it's a great opportunity to get up and use his gifts in a bigger way. I'm asking him because I believe in him and I believe in what he's sharing. Very much so as a pastor, and I want us to get behind this and see God change us and shape us all the more as the days increase and as our times change. So why don't we welcome Jonathan as he comes.
All right, good morning. I can hear my own voice, and it's annoying me already, so hopefully you guys can look past that or hear past that. So, as long as I can get this remote working here. Bingo. Okay. All right. So, yeah, like Jeremy said, my name is Jonathan. I am going to be speaking on millennials. A little bit more about me. Like Jeremy said, I am the firstborn of a family of two kids, two parents, Dennis and Tracy, who in my mind are lucky enough to be here today. So, hopefully they feel the same way. I am in my third of what feels like an eternity at Emmanuel Bible College. For those of you, there might be a current students or alumni here. I know John Schuett's here, and he actually gave me the go-ahead to just let it fly this morning. So blame it on him if I say anything you don't agree with, all right? So you guys are probably asking yourselves a few questions at this point. One of them being, what is a millennial? So for those of you who don't know what that is, a millennial is a person aged 18 to 34 in the year 2015. So I have the dates up there, 80 to 1998-ish. The reason I have the word ish up there is because depending on what literature you read or what research you're reflecting on, some people will cut it off at 1995, some people will extend it to 2002. So for the sake of this morning, by a show of hands, if anybody is in between the ages of 18 and 35, can I see how many of you are here? Bingo. So a lot of us. How many of you guys are just outside that wishing you were a couple years younger? There you go. Okay, awesome. Awesome. So another question you might be asking yourselves is, who gives me the authority or what makes me an expert on this? I'm going to show you a pie chart. It is 50% because Jeremy asked me to do some research. It's 45% because I am a millennial myself. I was born in 1995. And there is a sliver, 5% of self-entitlement in there as well, if I'm going to be totally honest with everybody here this morning. So now that we have an idea of what that is, I'm going to show you guys or talk to you guys about a couple fun facts. Most of them I found interesting, but keep in mind the information I'm going to throw at you because a lot of these will show their significance as I continue through my presentation, okay? So in the U.S. alone, there's a collective $1 trillion in student loan-based debt shared by millennials. Okay. Despite that, we are on track to being the most educated generation of all time. So we're smart. According to Walden University, 81% of us have donated money, goods, or services. So we do have a little bit of a servant's heart at times. 75% of us are not willing to compromise our family or personal views. so we are stubborn. According to the Huffington Post, 61% of millennials are worried about the state of the world and feel personally responsible to make a difference. So we do care, regardless of our actions. We do have a significant heart for people. 39% of us have at least one tattoo, so we're pretty committed. 65% of millennials say that losing their phone or computer would have a greater negative impact on their daily routine than losing their vehicle. A little bit ridiculous, but super true. So I'm going to show you guys a little bit what I would call the millennial top 10. So this was done by a couple gentlemen named Tom and Jess. They wrote a book. It's mostly American-based. It is very hard to find Canadian statistics on this subject because we're such a small population. There's not a lot going on. So a lot of what I'm sharing is going to be U.S.-based, but Canada usually follows pretty close to what's going on there. So if you take a look at this top 10, we'll notice a lot of things there that probably a lot of us would rank on this top 10. So things like family, friends, education, spouse and partner, finances, spiritual matters, a lot of these are things that we're all concerned about. But if you look to the left of those, or the right, rather, of those things, we're going to see a percentage. So that's out of this top 10, what people would rate the highest as their biggest priority. So if you take a look at spiritual matters, it is ranked a little bit higher than happiness, but not by much. I don't know about a lot of you guys, but my happiness has a direct correlation with my spiritual journey, my relationship with Jesus. So it's a little interesting when I'm doing this research to keep that in mind. The book also goes on to say that 96% of millennials believe they will do something great. 76% are highly motivated to serve society. Only 13% say some type of spirituality is very important to them. So that's a large population of people who are willing and think they're capable of doing something great, but are willing to do it without a spiritual relationship. I don't know about you, but that sounds very difficult. So why is it that so many of us who are highly educated and concerned with making the world a better place, willing to do so without spirituality being a staple in our attitudes and behaviors? Some of you guys might be asking yourself this question, is where's Jesus? I'm actually here to tell you that we might be asking the wrong question. I don't think Jesus is absent. So the Barna Group, which is a large research, I don't know, facility or department, I guess you can call it, they published a study in 2013 where about 10 years of research was published on millennials. Just over 27,000 interviews with people in between the ages of 18 and 35 were conducted. When asked what drives spiritual growth the most, millennials list five things. They list prayer, they list family and friends, they list the Bible, they list having children, and a relationship with Jesus. So those five things there, I don't know about the rest of you, but that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things that I would directly relate to my relationship and faith as well. So I don't actually think that the Jesus is missing. I think what we're actually missing is the word church or the idea of church. So, I just really want to stress before we get into more so the reasons I think we need to change things, I just want to clarify that I'm not here today to tell you that you as Country Hills are doing it wrong. I'm not here to tell you that people in this congregation are being neglectful or rejecting or being mean or rude to my generation. I'm not here to condemn or convict. I'm here to just merely make people aware of what's my passion and really what is at hand and at stakes here with such a large generation. So the real question I think we should be asking is where's the church? Not where's Jesus? So why is it that the millennial generation has drifted so far away from the organized church? Why is it that in the last 10 years, the unchurched portion of millennial generation has grown from 46% to 52%? Some of the reasons that I think come into play here are that we are interested in authenticity and we crave a depth of meaning. We desperately want things to be as real as possible. And a large portion of us don't view the church as a place where that's being facilitated or being an opportunity to explore that. So we are often overwhelmed with life. We have a hard time navigating the onslaught of information that's thrown at us every day. Because we are the largest generation, we're also the largest generation that's advertised towards. We're constantly being bombarded with different worldviews, different opinions, different ideas, everything. It's all being thrown at us every day. We're having a hard time navigating that. With that, though, is that We are searching for answers to the questions we have, but are having a hard time finding them in the church. So one of the things, the criticisms that was mentioned throughout my research, and a lot of millennials would believe this, is that they don't find the church to have enough community where deep relationships or lasting impacts are being made. So the church needs to be authentic. And so I'm saying the church is only this deep. We're a kiddie pool. We're only about this deep a lot of times, the church. How often is it that we come to church and a lot of us sit in the same spot? A lot of us talk to the same people. We drink the same cup of coffee. We pack up. We get out of here. We grab Swish LA on the way home and then go on with our days. How many of us do that, right? I'm guilty of that. How often is it that during the greeting time when you see somebody you haven't seen in a week and they ask you, hey, how's it going? Your default answer is, I'm doing great. How about you? When in reality, you had a terrible week. You might have lost your job. You got in a fight with your spouse, girlfriend, whatever. Your parents are giving you trouble about how you spend your money. I don't know. That's something I deal with, so I don't know if it's everybody else's, right? So what do we as church believers and congregations do with that? And some of you guys might not agree. Some of you sitting here today might have great experiences in small groups, in your church involvement, in ministry. It doesn't matter. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. That's awesome, and I'm super excited for you. The reality is, though, there's a lot of us who don't have that experience. So millennials are interested in being authentic just as much as they are wanting to see it in others. We aren't interested in relegating our faith just to Sunday mornings. So what do churches, what do we need to do with that? I think we need to spend more time exploring and teaching cultural discernment. We need to spend more time showing millennials and everybody, really, how to take their faith into the real world. How to take it from Sunday morning, listening to Pastor Jeremy or the worship music. How do you take what you've learned and experienced outside of this culture here? Culture isn't going anywhere. It shows no signs of slowing down, and really it defines a lot about who we are. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, and I think regardless of your religious practices or beliefs or understandings, it is a reality. So I don't think we need to shy away from culture. I think we need to continue being a part of it and show people how we can influence it. I think the church needs to embrace. I think the church needs to embrace people and millennials for exactly who we are. We're culturally involved. We are desperate for authenticity. We're desperate to serve and to give people our time. We're told all day, whether it be at school, work, on the internet, Facebook, Instagram, or whatever, that we don't measure up. There's a lot of experiences I've had where I'm scrolling through news feeds, wasting time or whatever, and I'm told that I don't make enough money, or that my job isn't good enough for me, or I don't have a six-pack abs, or whatever it might be. We're constantly told we don't measure up. So let's not bring that to the church as well. I think the church needs to be a place where people can come, regardless of who they are or what they're experiencing, and be welcomed with open arms. This also means that we need to teach people how to sense a calling, and we need to embrace it when it's not a ministry position. So in reality, a majority of us are not going to end up in formal church ministry. I'm a Bible college student, and I don't even know if I'm going to end up in formal ministry. Some of us are going to have the calling to be a carpenter, to be a dentist, to be a teacher, to be a fry cook. Some of us are going to have that, and we want to take those jobs and serve Jesus while doing them. So this means the church needs to be okay with a calling that is not a youth pastor or a worship director or whatever it might be. We need to be okay when people feel a different calling. We need to encourage that, support it, and celebrate it when it is accomplished. So the church doesn't embrace. Millennials are actually 3 times more likely to stay a part of the church if they learn to view their gifts and passions as a part of God's calling. So we need to teach that and show people and give people avenues to explore those things. Millennials are also 4 times more likely to have learned at church how the Bible applies to their field or career of choice. So it's here that people are learning that. We just need to get people here to do that. The church needs to recognize and continue manifesting that in young people. Show people how to find their calling, teach them to discern it, and celebrate it when it is discovered. This is the one that I'm probably the most passionate about. The church needs to stop stereotyping. Again, I'm not placing blame. I'm not saying you guys are guilty of this. I am saying that probably each and everyone individually is guilty of stereotyping or judging somebody by a book by its cover, you could say. We're going to watch a video really quick. It's about 2.5, almost 3 minutes long. It was made by a pastor. His name is Micah Tyler. It is kind of a musical jingle, and I am sorry. The tune will be stuck in your head all day, okay? So just pay attention here. It was intended to be a parody. He's not saying that, he's not blaming anybody, but he used it to open up a conference on young adults, showing people how to look past stereotypes and see the unique individuals behind them. I think it'll play. Oh. Ding, ticka-ding, ticka-ding, ding, ding, ding.
There he sits inside your local coffee shop, sporting a man bun and facial hair. Somehow he believes, although he has no job, that by his 30s he will be a millionaire. M-I-L-L-E-N-N-I-A. Selfies on her Instagram with a quote that's inspirational. Hopes to change the world while wearing yoga pants, armed with her dreams and knowledge of essential oils. M-I-L-L-E-N-N-I-A. Criticism isn't easy for their ears. They feel like they know most everything. See, they grew up with undeserved confidence, 'cause they got trophies just for participating. M-I-L-L-E-N.
So the church is stereotyping, if you guys didn't pick up on that. So what does the church need to do with that? I think this is a great opportunity for people to mentor. Look past a person's appearance. Look past, I skipped the whole part, awesome. Look past their expensive taste in coffee and the fact that they roll their jeans up or wear plaid shirts a lot or forget to shave or, again, use their money differently than what you would think, Mom. All right? Use it as an opportunity to walk with somebody. Millennials want to be taken seriously right now. We're an impatient bunch, so use that as a chance to help us learn to be patient, to explore our faith, and to be open to answering questions. Be the comfort for a millennial. I talked about this earlier, too. Be somebody who is a safe place, open arms and open ears. Somebody they can't wait to see because they know you're waiting to answer those tough questions they're wrestling with. One thing to keep in mind, too, when mentoring is mentor with the open mind to reverse mentoring. Reverse mentoring is the idea of a give and take. It's the experience between a millennial and an experienced leader. They need to come together. Just because you might be on the church board or experienced Christian life for 30 plus years, maybe you've been a Christian longer than you weren't. Don't take that as not being able to learn something from us as well. Thank you. So yeah, don't forget or don't hesitate to be vulnerable with us. That's that authenticity that I spoke about earlier. Vulnerability and being willing to allow people to walk with you too is an authentic relationship. So what's the bottom line? The bottom line is this. We are the largest generation of all time with some of the greatest potential for greatness. Yeah, that's a little bit of self-entitlement. It's a little bit of pride as well. We believe in ourselves. We're overly committed. We are capable. And a lot of us are in love with Jesus. So let's be authentic, okay? Let's be this and not this. Let's be deeper than what we our natural tendencies allow us to be, okay? I just got an email, cool. We need to embrace, okay? Embrace. So be this and not this. I'm a really large Jim Carrey fan, so I don't know if anybody picked up on that. But so be willing to open your arms to people who are broken, people who are searching, or people who don't have it all figured out. Allow them to crowd you with questions, to be close to you, to seek your help. Look past stereotypes. So that means being this and not this. Okay? Let's allow Judy to do the judging. Okay? We're not here to tell people that they're wrong or that they are bad people. We're here to walk through them and navigate those feelings and let them come to those conclusions on their own. So it's more or less it because I skipped a large section. So I think what I'm going to do, I'm just going to throw up the last slide here. So thank you guys for listening. I don't ever want to feel like you guys can't approach me or ask me questions or give me pushback or feedback. I threw up some of my contact information there. Feel free to email, tweet, or Facebook. And for those of you who are older than millennials, Twitter's cool. So maybe look into it. And for those of you, too, whose head's going to hurt because you couldn't find Waldo earlier, he's right there. All right? Thank you.
Would you stand with us again?